Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a second segment for April 15, 2008. And tonight we are speaking with Larry Jarboe from Charlotte Hall, Maryland, sponsor of two events, one of which is coming up in just a couple days. Larry, you are with us, are you not?
Yes, I'm right here.
Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here.
Well, and you've been here before, but not as a guest. You've called in and made some interesting points, asked questions, and contributed greatly to the discussion on previous webcasts.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be in the hot seat for a change.
Yes, and hot seat it is, because you've only got 2 days before this historic hydrogen booster rally is to leave from your business property there in Charlotte Hall, Jarboe's Mill.
That's right, right in Charlotte Hall, Maryland. And we're going to, the plan A, you know how you have to have different plans depending on what the situation in life is. Plan A is we leave 5 o'clock Thursday, and that's April 17th, and we'll drive, it's over 1,000 miles down to Key Largo, Florida, and we'll arrive around 5 o'clock p.m. the next day. So a 24-hour run. It's kind of brutal, but everybody should have a co-driver. And right now we don't have many cars. It's sort of weaning down to just a couple, or I'm hoping at least three. But even if we've got two, I'm willing to roll. If we're down to one, well, I'll put on a, you know, demonstrate my vehicle, because I'm going to be there. And I hope other folks will be there as well.
Well, I hope so too. Several manufacturers of these booster devices have been notified of this rally. And at least one that I communicated with this week has already done his own cross-country run using one of his boosters on a diesel pickup truck.
Good for him.
So he traveled a couple thousand miles already, and I think that's why he may have been a little bit hesitant to make an additional couple thousand
miles. I know what that's like. You can get kind of wore out when you're making runs like that.
Well, not only that, all of these booster manufacturers are swamped right now because of the high price of fuel.
Well, it's created a market, and, of course, people are getting on the Internet, and they're finding this information. And, of course, it's not information the oil companies are going to tell you about, and it's not something that even your local government or your federal government is going to tell you about, because, obviously, they generate income from fuel taxes.
Yeah, you would think that right now, with the despair that's being felt in this country, that the mainstream media would be screaming about hydrogen boosters, and they're silent. As far as I can tell, there's just not enough hype in proportion to what a great story this is.
Well, I think they're more concerned with, you know, what church the presidential candidates go to, or which one of them is more elitist than the other. You know, the issues, you know, of the presidential campaign are so superficial compared to what's really happening in the country. It's, to me, it's embarrassing that our country has gotten to this point that we're discussing really unimportant issues. When the price of diesel fuel, I looked up today, was $4.19. That's 75 cents has gone up in the past month, the month and a half. And, you know, when you break the trucker, when you break the guy who's hauling the goods all over this country, and you deliver the profits to the oil companies and to the government rather than to that trucker's family, guess what? Eventually the system breaks down, because we need the truckers to deliver the goods,
and
they can't afford to do that.
The problem. I mean, that's a serious aspect. I agree. In fact, I do a lot of shipping. I run a business, and it requires me to pay a large fuel surcharge every time I ship something.
Absolutely.
Well,
and so, you know, that's my focus right now, is to work on hydrogen boosting diesel engines. There's a guy who's doing it out in Kansas, fairly well known for it. He's using bottle hydrogen, and he's getting phenomenal numbers. He's getting, like, he's retrofitting Hummers and getting 36 miles to the gallon. And the beauty of hydrogen boosting is you get more power, you get more miles per gallon, and you get less pollution.
Yeah, so it's a no-brainer all the way around.
It would seem to me like that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I would think that it offers a hope for the American people, and really for everyone around the world, that we can gradually transition from the fossil fuels, but find cleaner ways to burn them, and gradually go to the electric vehicles, gradually go to other sources of energy. But when you're looking at trucking, an electric vehicle isn't going to cut it. You know, we can zip around in electric sports cars, you and I, and smoke mama's SUV, if you know what I'm saying. But the trucker, he needs that diesel engine to get the goods to market. So that's been my focus, and that's why I, some months ago, purchased a couple of diesel rabbits and the VW rabbits, and then I've been working on my booster system to prove that the technology works. And, of course, there's other folks working with gas cars, which is just as important because they can save on their commutes, and that's a big deal when people are driving 40, 50 miles, you know, to work. And the price of fuel, if they can offset their cost by, say, 20%, that's a big deal, especially with some of these boosters that, you know, they only cost a couple hundred dollars and they're not hard to install. It makes good sense to install one.
Yeah, it does for environmental reasons. It does for economic reasons. And as you said, even for performance.
Mm-hmm. It's the win-win-win situation. Not many times in life do you find that package. And that's why I'm kind of surprised the mainstream media really hasn't picked up on it. But I don't think there's been enough rallies. I don't think there's been enough education from our end because the numbers vary so much. You know, some guy will say, I got 100% better fuel economy. Someone will say they got 10%. What are the numbers? What is documented? That's the tough thing, is the documentation. So that was the purpose of the rally, is to post some numbers out there. And if we can get them this year and then do it year after year after year, it becomes a gradual improvement.
Right. And, you know, part of the problem here is that this process has been delayed by about, 90 years?
In your book, you've got a patent right there. Basically, an electrolyzer, the guy has it hooked up to his vehicle. And you know, evidently it worked back then, and it works today. Go figure.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we could even call this an anniversary-type event. Oh, I don't believe it. Look at this. This patent was issued April 9th of 1918. So
wow.
We celebrated the 90th anniversary of Charles Fraser's U.S. patent number 1,262,034. April 9th of this year marked the 90th anniversary that his patent was issued.
Isn't that ironic that he's probably up in heaven right now looking down saying, see, guys, I told you it'd work.
Yeah, whereas his invention was sent to hell.
Yeah, that's a sad statement, but there's truth in that. And,
yeah.
And we both, you know the oil companies have manipulated things. I think there's a change going on, though, that there's the Internet, the information that people are getting from the Internet, there's not enough men in black to go around to suppress all of it, if you know what I'm saying. That people are when I first got into this was 30 years ago, and, you know, the way you'd find out information is you go to the back of Popular Mechanics, and you see something like, you know, 200 mile per gallon carburetor. And you send in, you know, your $2 and your self-addressed stamped envelope, and you never knew what you were going to get. But that's how you got information. Today, when you want to get information, you get on a Google search, and you get so much information. It's then you have to sift through and find the gold nuggets through the sand, because there's a lot of hype. And what we're looking for now is, instead of hype, what's the best way to produce hydrogen efficiently that makes sense and really does boost a vehicle quite well. So there's some good designs out there, and there's some poor designs, and we've got to sift through them and help people, you know, find what works best for them. And that's where a booster rally would be a very educational thing, that people can come, they can look at different people's boosters, and people can talk about them and show the different designs, whether it's a parallel cell, a series cell, or, as in the case of the SMAX booster, a shared bath, step gap cell. So there's all these different combinations.
Yeah, and then who knows what else could even be done. I mean, there are people talking about nanoparticles on the
absolutely.
Plate.
I think we're on the brink of a new age in energy, and I liken it very much to the I've got a book that actually you gave me about automobiles of the world, and it's fascinating to see all the different cars that were made in the early 1900s, all over the world in small shops, and the craftsmanship that was put in those vehicles and the different designs and the different ideas they came up with. And I think that's happening right now with Electrolyze.
There is a revolution going on with regard to small shops cranking out high technology answers to our energy problems.
And that's exciting.
It is.
That's if government won't provide the solutions, which I don't think they are, and if the oil companies obviously have been suppressing it, but now we've got people literally giving the information away, saying, here's the design, here's what I've done, and if you want to buy one from me, well, you're welcome to, here's the price, or you can go to the hardware store and pick up these parts and build it yourself. So giving people
great.
A choice.
It really is great.
That's unprecedented. Usually people grab a patent and they're very secretive about it. Today, people realize, well, shoot, the patent process will take them 17 years to get through the patent process. By the time they get the thing patented, it's already expired.
Yeah.
And somebody's stolen it from them.
What I think is good about this sharing of information, I mean, people realizing that there's a very powerful mafia that's never going to allow free energy to get to the people unless it's given away by numerous, grassroots-type activists who are themselves tinkerers and who've discovered the stuff. The good thing about this, I think, is that when big business does start to market it, the price is going to have to be right out the gate at a lower type of structure, price structure, than what typically happens. Like when you get a new computer, it always starts out at a very high price, and then as technology advances, the price drops, and eventually you buy a much more powerful computer now for $300 than you could have bought for any price 10 years ago. And so it seems to me that because of this generous sharing of information and even actual devices being sold at cost almost by small-time businessmen who are more interested in helping their fellow man than in making a huge profit, it seems that the hydrogen booster retail price is not going to be as high as it would otherwise have been as a new technology being introduced by large companies, you know?
I agree with you 100%. Like, I'm seeing on the Internet, you know, some of these companies that are making trucking boosters, and they're in the range of the $10,000 to $15,000. But the reality is a SMACS booster, a pair of SMACS boosters will put out almost as much output, and for a couple $100.
Yeah, and I think that's good, because the average person is not going to be able to spend $15,000 to convert their car or their truck.
Exactly.
And so,
but a couple $100, my goodness, that's only 4 tanks of fuel.
Yeah.
And maybe 3 tanks of fuel.
Exactly.
Depending on your vehicle. That's truly, that's a good investment. And it's not such a bad investment if you find that it didn't work for you because of the computers or, you know, with the newer cars, you've got to override sensors and things like that. Or you make low enough where you sort of slip in under the radar screen. And so that's one of the reasons why I stay with naturally aspirated diesels. And if I went to a car, I would probably go, I'd find something like you've got. You've got a straight six in your Ford and your Rambler, and that's with a carbureted. That's real simple to work on.
Yeah, what I'm interested in investigating, though, is the claim of this Colorado company, Hydronox,
mm-hmm.
wherein they say that running just hydrogen from your booster into the intake and not the oxygen is a more, as they say, a symbiotic relationship with the newer computerized engines and the sensors and the way that the presence of the oxygen from the hydroxy gas, it ends up causing more problems than it's worth, and so you're better off ducting that away and just introducing hydrogen. And it seems that their device is putting out almost no hydrogen at all, I mean like a liter per hour, and yet they're claiming, you know, I think 3 miles per gallon on SUV of increase in fuel economy.
Well, they should be at the booster rally.
Absolutely.
They should be showing that. Now, that's the kind of thing that people should come and put their booster where their mouth is, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I, of course, made them aware of it. Again, they're just a few guys running this small business. They just started up, and they're probably swamped right now with orders.
Well, that's what's happening out there, that most of the folks that I know that are making them are very busy, and that's a good thing. That's getting the word out there. Let's hope they're making good units that people are going to be satisfied with in the long run. And the beauty of a hydrogen booster is, once you've made that investment, you can, if you sell your car, you can take it off that car and put it on your next car.
Exactly. Or you can sell it for what you paid for it and move up to the newest version, which is probably a little better than what you had. You know,
I think that's even better because we're going to see an evolution in this. Just like those cars that I was talking about earlier, you know, in the old days, how quickly the cars evolved. And then they got to a point where today all the cars are the same. We've had no evolution of the internal combustion engine for the past, 40 years.
Yeah, you know what gets me is that when you see these news programs about the car shows they've had in Vegas and L.A. and New York and so on, and even in Europe, and they basically focus on a bunch of gadgetry, all kinds of electronic gadgetry, and they don't address such things as what we're talking about. I mean, you think
No, they don't address the basic issue of mileage. And I think they've forgotten what it was like 30 years ago when the whole country transitioned. I mean, you remember when you were driving a Datsun, weren't you?
Yeah, my first car was a Valiant with a slant set. It wasn't too bad. It had a lot of power.
That was a great car.
Oh, yeah.
300,000 mile for the engine. Of course, the car wouldn't go, but, 200,000, but the engine kept going.
Yeah.
Right down the road. I mean, they were great cars. And then, but that little Datsun you had, that thing got 45 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, B110 or a 1200, as it was called.
Mm-hmm.
Little
absolutely.
That,
so,
really,
you know, and we're not doing that. Today, you got to get a Prius in order to do that.
Yeah,
and
well,
something's
Kevin Carter
wrong.
Was interviewed last year, and you can find his clip on a couple of the booster sites on YouTube. And he says, look, when I was president, we increased the fuel economy for American cars. And after I left office and another president came in, all those benefits were rescinded or, revoked.
Mm-hmm.
And now the economy of vehicles in America right now is the same or worse than it was before I became president. He said that in an interview last year.
Well, and see, that's a statement of truth. And why is that? Well, basically because there were quite a few years where the price of fuel stayed down around $1 a gallon, and we didn't think about it. You know, at that point, you buy a bigger car, you're not pushed. The $4 fuel and beyond is pushing people. So, you know, in some ways, this is driving the technology, and it's a good time to be doing this.
Yeah, and it's also a symptom of something very wrong with society when we forget that the Earth's resources are limited, and anything we do to soil our own nest, so to speak, is something that someone's going to have to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we're at an older stage in life, a later stage in life, and we're not so concerned about our own health and well-being because we feel like we'll be gone before, you know, the bill has to be paid, it shows a great lack of concern for the younger generation and forthcoming generations to say that it doesn't matter how much we consume and how wasteful we are, how polluting we are.
Well, and we do it not only with gasoline. You know, I hear people saying, well, you know, if you have water cars, you know, let's say we come up with the concept of we're actually able to crack water, and your book shows people who've done it and documents that. And let's say we transition to that next level beyond the boosted cars into actually running on water, that we draw a source of energy or create an anomaly so that the molecule cracks much easier than Faraday calculations. At that point, are we going to use too much water? Well, the reality is the little bit of water you'll use is no more than a toilet flush.
That's true.
So,
if you conserve water at home, you won't be contributing to any loss of water in the general scheme of things.
Exactly. You know, and we're surrounded. We live basically oceans on all sides of us, and so we're surrounded by water. It's just a matter of, like, we live in a sea of energy. We just have to know how to extract the fresh water from the oceans and from the sea of energy, the energy that's all around us. So there's just wonderful answers. It's just a matter of how we perceive it and how we go about doing it. And of course, it's going to have to come from the grassroots, and it's going to have to be shared. And once that happens, you can't stop it. It's just going to be. And so I see us on the next, 100 years ago, we had the Industrial Revolution. I see us now, we're on the next era is the energy evolution. And that's where we've got to go, is to clean energy, that one thing when people talk about global warming, that's a very divisive issue. You know, you'll find people will just line up on one side or the other of the fence, and it divides people. And I tell people, look, we all agree that America should be energy independent. That makes sense. That's a universal issue. As far as global warming, we can disagree on that. But the reality is, if you go into your garage and you have your car idling and the door is closed and your garage is closed up, you're going to die within a few minutes. It's going to poison you.
Yeah, no one argues about that.
No one argues. They know that's true. I said, okay, now let's step out from a universal perspective where we're outside of the planet looking down. The planet, from a universal point of view, is no more than a little garage with a little bit of atmosphere, and that's ours. That's all, you know, that's all the air we got. And so if we keep pumping poison into it, it's going to come back and hurt us. And so then people agree with that, and then we can find common, you know, a common ground, a consensus, and we can build from that to say, well, let's make a difference. So that's where I'm at, is I want to be one of the people, and I know you're in the same situation, and we're blessed to know a lot of people out there who are in this situation and want to make a difference.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who don't care. In fact, a guy from L.A. once told me, I don't want to breathe anything I can't see, you know.
You know, that's sort of his consciousness, and that's basically in the long run his problem. But ultimately, people will come around and step by, and maybe even if they're not aware on that level, trust me, that guy in Los Angeles doesn't like paying $5 a gallon for fuel.
No, that's true. There are plenty of reasons why we should be concerned, and it takes that before people will get on this bandwagon.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what it takes, so be it. If people don't care squat about the Earth and future generations of mankind having a place to live that's actually livable and decent, and if they, you know, hopefully they're concerned about the cost of food, which is now being affected by this fuel mess. There was a very shocking article in the British press yesterday about worldwide starvation because of the available food supplies being severely affected by the use of agricultural lands for fuel production.
Well, you know, and now there's a rest of the story to that, too. I always like the Paul Harvey rest of the story. You know, they're sort of saying the biofuels, and this is a media thing that you're starting to see, biofuels are going to cause starvation. Well, now, who's telling that story? I would guarantee it's the oil companies telling that story.
Yeah, that's true. I don't doubt that there's some motives there, too.
And when we have a situation out in this country where we're paying farmers not to farm, there's millions and millions of dollars paid in subsidies to farmers not to farm their land. Well, if we said, no, there's going to be no more subsidies so that you don't farm, but what we'll do is we'll set a minimum price per bushel of, say, canola grain or whatever. I like canola because it enriches the soil. There's certain really beneficial crops you can grow that really are good for the soil and also make a lot of, you know, a lot of oil, so to speak. And we encourage the farmers to grow instead of telling them, we'll pay you not to grow. That's a far better, and you save all that money in subsidies. We shouldn't have subsidies not to grow when we need the grain. We need the biofuels and the food. There should be no excuse not to farm. That's one of those Bubba deals, you know.
The other side of the coin is, do food prices go up when farmers are receiving more money to grow fuel crops than, you know, edible food crops? And that appears to be happening.
Well, it does, but then it's a matter of go to your local farm stands right in your own community. Buy from the produce stands. Don't buy, if you go buy something from the local a Sure Fine or, you know, your Winn-Dixie's or the major chains, that food has to travel about 1,500 miles to get to you on the average. Whereas you can go right down to the farm produce outlets, you know, right in your own community, and buy wonderful goods, at least when they're in season. And I've been, you know, as a county commissioner, I've really been a promoter of buy within your own community.
Well,
and
we're
going to see more and more of this.
Your own front yard.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Grow it yourself. And I think we're going to see people people got pretty independent in the early 1980s and late 70s, and that's the days of the Mother Earth News, if you remember the magazine. And there was a movement of independence and sustainability and common sense, and people were doing the smaller cars, and they had their ethanol stills, and my gosh, you know, people had all these different ideas, and you could read about them and build them. And I think we're going to get back to that. I think we have to.
So you think the Humvee and the SUV are going to yield place to the that consciousness of a bygone era?
I think they'll have to go. Unless somebody is so ostentatiously wealthy that they want to show off that they've got money to burn, literally.
Or someone shows up to your rally with a super booster.
Well, that's what we're hoping, is someone shows up with a Hummer with a super booster and is getting 36 miles to the gallon. Then we're feeling pretty good about things.
Yeah, really. Well, we know it's possible because it's been done, and there are some guarantees associated with some of the products that are being offered by different companies.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be interesting to see, it will be interesting to see who shows up and what they have to show. And even if it doesn't work out that there's a great showing at this particular event, you have another event coming up in 2 months.
Yeah, we sure do. We've got the alternative energy event. I call it Jarbo's Mill because it's my mill. I've got a 30-acre mill operation. And it's the, what is it, the 28th and 29th? I've got to get it straight myself.
Yes, the last weekend in June. 28th.
Last weekend in June. And basically we're scouring all over the United States for unique alternative energy technologies that can make a difference and are working technologies. So people can bring them in, demonstrate them, and have a ready audience. It's not about trying to sell you anything. It's about providing information. It's no cost to the event. People are welcome to come. I say it's like the Yasker's Farm of alternative energy, meaning it's free. It's free to the public, and come on in, and let's learn something. Let's learn from each other.
So it's a Woodstock where no one needs to worry about embarrassment of someone having their clothes off or anything.
Well, no, keep your clothes on, please, please. I'm a county commissioner, and you know we can't have any of that stuff. You know.
And if anyone's dropping any acid, it's going to be into their electrolyzer to use as electrolyzer.
Well, no, I hope they use a base in their electrolyzer because that's, you know. But I guess acid does work. Hydrochloric does.
Yeah,
does
that's
work.
What Dad Garrett used in his, in fact.
You're right. You're right. So yeah, if any acid, that's where it goes into the electrolyzer, but it doesn't, you know, nothing illegal. This is all about information. It's about making a difference. That's the key.
Yeah, but it is a similar revolutionary, or as you like to say, evolutionary process, in that this change has been long overdue. It's been patented in the U.S. Patent Office. All these devices have their roots in U.S. patents.
Mm-hmm.
And so it isn't something that's totally unknown, and we shouldn't act like it's a new technology, because it isn't.
We're actually about 100 years behind the times.
Yeah, and that's the disgrace of it all, really.
I would agree. Look at your cell phone, and look at how quickly that technology has evolved. In the mid-90s, we didn't have cell phones. You know, we didn't even have, I mean, the portable phones were like a luxury, and they were a great big clunky battery pack that you had to carry with them. And this cost was outrageous, you know.
Suddenly everyone has one and can't live without it.
Well, and you've got computer access, and you can film anywhere. I mean, it's amazing. So if that technology has moved that quickly, certainly the automobile and the internal combustion and transportation could have moved just as quickly if we had a competitive free market in that realm. In the electronics realm, there's a huge free market moving. And in the auto companies, obviously, there's only a few. And with the oil companies, same thing. They're a very limited number, and they control a lot of stuff. Well, their day is basically, their days are numbered. That you can't keep pumping out of the earth, because eventually you don't have any more. So,
and even if it was still there, the stupidity of utilizing or exploiting that resource to the hilt, the harmful effects of it in every way imaginable are abundantly clear now, and there's no excuse for continuing to do it, even if there was a bunch there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If you take all those hydrocarbons out of the earth, and now you pump all that and you turn it into exhaust and pollute the air, and that goes into the rain and then turns into acid rain and pollutes the water, what have you done? You've just ruined a wonderful world that we live in. It doesn't make sense, and it hasn't made sense for 100 years. So we do have to step back and find ways to make a difference. I spent years running boats down in Florida. Loved it. Wonderful thing. But I always thought, here I'm taking these people out to the reef, you know, to enjoy the nature and everything else. Meanwhile, I've got two Detroit 871s belching fumes and polluting the atmosphere. Something is wrong with this equation. And so if I ever run a boat again, it's going to be a solar-powered electric boat where it's nice and cool, because sailing is, to me, too inconsistent. Every time I go sailing, it's right into the wind. The wind is blowing dead into where I want to go. I mean, from where I want to go, you know, and I got to tack back and forth all day. So I do like to be able to take a straight course if it's possible.
Well, hopefully that's how your rally will go in 2 days. And we've come to the end of our time, but why don't we just briefly mention how people can contact you if they want to participate. Is there an email address that you'd like to give out that people can contact you at? Or
I'll give my personal email address, and that way that they can contact me and it'll come right to me. And it's all small case letters, DCJARBOE, so that's DCJARBO@hotmail.com.
Okay, very good. And exactly what time and at what place is the rally going to take off from?
Well, we're going to be leaving from Charlotte Hall, Maryland at 5 p.m. So I'm asking if people want to come on by between 3 and 5 to talk to what drivers are there. And for the drivers showing up, please come after lunch. Well, come anytime, you know, because I run a mill operation there. It's in Charlotte Hall. And when you get to Charlotte Hall, just ask for the farmer's market. Everybody in Charlotte Hall knows where the farmer's market is, and I run the mill that's right beside it. It's Jarbo's Mill. And they can come on in, and if they have any problems, they can call my cell phone. Now, I'm putting this on the air, and, you know, please, be cautious. I mean, I don't want every insurance salesman in the world. You know how life is sometimes when you put your number out there. But it's 240-577-1240. And that way, if you're lost, just call me on the cell phone and we'll get you there.
Yeah, now this would also apply to someone who lives along the route of the rally. This is between the D.C. area and Key Largo, Florida, down mm-hmm. I-95. If somebody wanted to hook up with the rally, even for a short distance, when you're going to be making a pit stop.
That's a good idea. So they could call me if they're along 95, you know, all the way down to Florida. We'll pick up 836 down in South Florida somewhere, probably the Jupiter exit somewhere around there before getting to the Keys, because 95 gets real crazy around the Miami-Fort Lauderdale area. So we'll probably pick up the Florida Turnpike. So, you know, call me, kind of figure the time frame, and we're each going to have a co-driver, so the cell phone will be available, you know, on. Call me and we'll try to schedule a pit stop if it makes sense, you know, or if I know in advance, I'll try to work a pit stop in. Now, the challenge is going to be is if I'm the only vehicle and nobody else shows, I got a electric I know is working real hard on his vehicle. He had a frame weld that he had to do and then a alignment. So he's like right under the gun to get this job done. So he was one. Bob Boyce, very disappointingly, wasn't able to complete his cell. He was working on one for DOD, and that took a precedence, obviously, because the military is interested in this technology, and that's great that they recognize there's a need to conserve as well. So, you know, if I'm the only one, I'll do a rally, you know, around the Beltway or whatever, but I'm not going to make the run all the way to Florida. But if we've got enough cars, yeah, we'll be heading south and make the run and do it. So show up. That's the key. And, you know, if we've got 100 cars, I can't provide accommodations for 100 people. But if we don't, you know, there's hotels in town and all that. And but if there's only a few and you're cool, well, we'll find a way.
Now, Larry, what about the possibility of us doing just a very brief interview right around 5 o'clock? When you've got everyone assembled there, you're getting ready to leave and at least get a couple minutes of a description of what things look like there.
That would be fine. What I would say is we're going to have some folks filming, and so we could probably get that on YouTube, though it wouldn't happen right away, so to speak. What you're saying is you'd want to do maybe a webcast or something like that?
Yeah, or you could call me on your cell phone, and we could at least find out what's happening there.
Well, what I'd plan to do is use the cell phone to call Todd Hathaway, Major Hathaway, and he's going to come down, but then he's staying here. We've got a Navy director as well coming down with us, and he's going to document. And because we do want official documentation, we don't want anybody saying, "Well, they made this story up or whatever." And if we're, you know, we want it either way. If it's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad. What it is what it is. So Major Hathaway should be able to coordinate with the water car site, and of course that'll post right away. But I guess he could also coordinate with you if you wanted, and let you know what was happening.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get some information out right there on the site to see how many people showed up, who's being represented, what products, and how many are good to go.
Yeah, I hope a bunch show up. Unfortunately, I'm not getting a lot of emails from people saying they're coming, other than I've got, about 3 or 4 people, 2 cars that I know of. That's not a lot for a rally. It's kind of disappointing, but you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, that's true. And if nothing else, it shows that there are some determined people who are going to, do their best to make it happen, even if there isn't tremendous support on the part of, society at large.
All it takes is one person at a time to make a difference. That's the key. So you start small and you let it multiply.
Well, it appears that you're that person when it comes to a hydrogen booster rally, and very proud of you for it. We'll have to close it up so that you can get some sleep and work hard tomorrow in preparing all these details, and hopefully your shirts have arrived or will arrive, and people who show up will be able to have a commemorative T-shirt of the event.
If those shirts don't show up by tomorrow, I'm getting on the Internet and see where they are hung up, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I would think they'll arrive tomorrow.
All right.
Okay. Well, let's
catch you in a bit, and thanks for the interview.
All right, thank you.
Bye, James.
Bye-bye.